Welcome to Dr. Hustle, the podcast where we interview physicians and health professionals who are living at the crossroads of innovation as leaders, entrepreneurs, and artists. Our mission is to showcase the insights and skills that can help you discover the creative and leadership potential within yourself. Here's your host, Bassam Zahid.
Hey, listeners. Welcome to episode 2. The desire to become one's own boss and open a practice is not uncommon among physicians. We want to control our own hours, create another stream of income, and establish a predictable work-life balance. But where do we start? What if we have limited business knowledge? Who can we go to for help? Today's guest asked the same questions and found his way to an excellent solution. Dr. Wayne Moore is an emergency medicine physician who is the president and CEO of Moore Life Urgent Care, located in Gallatin, Tennessee. In just a few years, he managed to take the idea of opening an urgent care center into reality, while also working as the medical director for the physician assistant program at Meharry Medical College and staff physician in the Nashville General Hospital Emergency Department. He also previously served as the director of emergency medical services for Washington, D.C. Despite all his other responsibilities, he found a way to open the practice of his dreams. So are you up to the challenge?
Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Moore.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Let's start at the beginning. When did you decide you wanted to become a doctor?
Well, it was very interesting. It wasn't just one specific incident that inspired me. Fortunately, when I grew up here in Nashville, Tennessee, I grew up around a community of mentors who happened to be African-American physicians. There was a little hospital community called Riverside Hospital that was located in North Nashville. And I had the opportunity to work with a lot of those physicians and observe them. People like Dr. Dorothy Brown, who was the first black female surgeon in the state of Tennessee, a Meharry alum, Dr. A.P. Johnson, Dr. Ed Brown, Dr. Carl Dent, and Dr. Luke Dixon. All of these physicians impacted my choice of a career in life.
Were they all African American?
Yes, all of them were African American.
And was it common for African American professionals, we could say, coming from where you grew up?
I would say that I was blessed to be in a community that had African American physicians as mentors. Many of my colleagues have related to me that they haven't even seen a black physician until they gotten into college or medical school. So I feel truly blessed by that.
What were you like as a kid? What interest did you have?
Well, I had a number of interests, and a lot of my influence, as we spoke earlier, came from my dad. My dad, oddly enough, but he's a minister. And the one thing that I noted in his career pathway is that he majored in theology but minored in nursing. And I often used to say, Dad, how do those two fit?
Right.
And he shared with me that his ministry was a ministry of healing, a ministry that provided health and welfare to those in need. And he felt that the tradition of Christ was to bring healing to those who needed it. And so he actively tried to provide those services. His territory was over Alabama, Mississippi, and Mississippi, Alabama, Kentucky, and Tennessee. And he established a medical van that went to different areas for the poor and underserved, and he staffed it with physicians, and they had free clinics that helped people, and he would take us along with him.
Wow.
He went to disasters when there were hurricanes and tornadoes. He would take that. with him, and he would take us occasionally. He was also a civil rights activist as well, and I'll never forget him taking us to the Poor People's March in Washington, D.C., the one that Martin Luther King had planned to go to, but he was assassinated. Right. So those experiences, to me, gave me a sort of social justice healing, ministry of healing type of spirit. Other than that, I think I was a normal kid, played football, baseball and everything else like other kids. But I think I was keenly introduced to service to our mankind through my dad and the mentors that I related to.
So how early did you decide becoming a physician is it? Do you remember the age?
You know, it was always something that was in my mind. But I never really totally committed until I entered college.
Did you want to do anything else?
Yeah. I can distinctly remember a firehouse was built on our street in Nashville on White's Creek Pike. And I saw the paramedics running in and out of there. And at that time, the show Emergency was on. And I remember Roy and Johnny And I said, Dad, you know, I think I want to be a paramedic. And Dad just kind of looked at me. I'll never forget that. And he said, nope, I think you need to go to college, or widen your horizons, and look at doing something else. But keep that health thing in your mind.
And, a little subliminal messaging, huh?
True. Yes, yes. And he was right. As we talk about my career, I'll tell you how that came full circle, and I got to do EMS and do medicine at the same time.
Cool. So you went to undergrad at Oakwood University?
Yes, I did.
Was there any experiences you remember that might have foreshadowed the rest of your career?
Yes. I want to talk about two experiences, if you don't mind. One was when I was a senior, and this goes back a little bit, when I was in a senior in high school, this particular hospital called Riverside Hospital, I'll never forget, had a certified nursing technician course, and it lasted from 1 to 5 every day. Well, at that time, I was taking my high school classes from 7 to 12, and I decided to take that course while I was in high school, and so every day I'd take my full load and in my senior year, and then go to the hospital and take that course. And I utilized that to help me to see whether or not medicine was for me.
Right.
And that gave me a truly fruitful, hands-on experience about medicine. And I had a few encounters with people later on in life that came from that experience that solidified my foundation and desire to be a physician. I'll never forget, there was one patient that I was taking care of, and I told him I was aspiring to be a physician, and I will never forget, he looked in my eyes, very deeply into my eyes. It was almost like he looked into my brain, mm-hmm. And he said, Mr. Moore, you know what? One day you're going to make a great physician. And, you know, most people may take that flippantly, but that whole experience to me and the way he looked at me and the way he said what he said had a significant impact on my feeling that a greater power or a higher power was speaking to me and said, this is what you need to do. And that was a truly fruitful experience for me. Another experience in college, I'll never forget just when I was taking general biology, and I just loved biology. I was just excited about it. And I went to the chairman of the department. Interestingly enough, his name was Dr. Fish. And Dr. Fish, chairman of biology, I said, I'll never forget, I went to his office and said, Dr. Fish, I just love what we're doing. You know, what can I do to enhance or increase my knowledge of biology. And he said, you know, I like, you know, how you answer questions in class and what you're doing. You want to be a lab instructor? And I remember I was just struck, dumbfounded when he asked me that, because I never expected or tried to do something like that. When
are you talking about like the experience of teaching?
Yes, teaching students in labs biology and being a biology lab instructor. That was just an awesome experience for me. And I got to interact with students and, of course, reinforce the knowledge that I had learned during my biology courses. And I did it for the rest of my time in college. That truly was enlightening. And so that was a truly great experience for me and opened up doors that never would have been open.
Right. And so you were locked into becoming a doctor, and you presumably applied to a bunch of medical schools, and you decided to attend Meharry Medical College, which is a historically black college and university in Nashville, Tennessee.
Absolutely.
What motivated you to choose Meharry?
Good question. A lot of things. And it actually goes back even to, you know, my elementary school years. It was kind of embedded to me. I'll never forget, my dad was, we used to go on Sunday drives. And I'll never forget one time, one of our drives was driving through Meharry's campus. And as a youngster, I saw all these buildings being built, the LRC, the hospital at the time. And I just was amazed that in the South and in the segregated South, the African Americans were building these structures dedicated to education and healing. And I knew several medical students from Meharry. And I saw their involvement, their spirituality, because some of them attended my dad's churches. And I was just inspired at the mission that Meharry had. And later on, when I was at Oakwood, and there was a kind of industrial environmental disaster in a town called Triana, Alabama. It was right outside of Huntsville. And I was truly inspired by the fact that Meharry environmentalists and occupational medicine physicians went there and determined that toxic waste were being dispersed in this poor African-American community. These guys from Meharry found this out and actually corrected a situation for an entire population. And that truly impressed me, to know that this institution not only works with individual patients, but populations on an environmental level as well. And so those type of influences and observations strongly influenced me to matriculate and attend Meharry.
How early did you decide that you wanted to become an emergency medicine physician?
I think I can say that EMS was always in my background, and so that influenced me. But rolling back a little bit, my certified nursing technician license allowed me to look for summer jobs. By this time, my family had moved to Atlanta. So I got a job at Grady Hospital, which is one of the largest hospitals in the country. And the young lady that hired me said, "I know a place that would be great for you to work. And I think the emergency department would be great for you to work." And I said, "Fine, I'll try. I'll do anything." Well, for three summers, I worked in the surgical emergency department at Grady Hospital. I sewed up people 8 hours a day. I got to observe gunshot wounds, violence. I was there when the Atlanta child murders occurred. I was there when a significant amount of violence occurred. And this on this occasion, the state government had to put state troopers in Atlanta because there was so much violence. So I got a chance to witness how emergency physicians work and what they do. And I think that sealed it. I know that's what sealed it for me, that experience.
So you decided to get your residency at Howard University in Washington, D.C.?
Yes.
What was that experience like?
Oh, that was an awesome experience. It turned out that that was the best pathway that I could have taken for the experiences that we experienced, and also its location, its geographic location in the nation's capital, the contacts that you had. Washington, D.C. was Chocolate City, so to speak, meaning that my exposure to mentors and individuals that could help advance my career were there. And so I admit I wasn't fully thinking about all of that, but it came to be that all of those things made it the best choice.
Right. And now Howard is another one of those historically black colleges.
Yes.
So it seems like there's this pattern of you attending HBCUs, and you are already rare because it's not often that you see a black doctor or even a black entrepreneur. At some point when you're at Howard, you decided to propose a project to the public health commissioner. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. I'd just like to preface that with when you're in residency, it is very important to establish friends and relationships. And there were groups of us who had common ideas and common aspirations in medicine. So basically, there were a few of my colleagues that we linked up with and who were emergency physicians or residents as well. And we all admitted that we had some of the same goals and objectives and that we wanted to cover in life.
What were the goals?
Our goals were, number one, to attain economic freedom, to pursue social justice, and to enhance access to care. So what we knew, and one of my colleagues was very, you know, outgoing, and we all pretty much were, we tried to always get involved and go to events where important people were talking and people that had ideas. So one of my colleagues went to an event and met the Assistant Commissioner of Health for the District of Columbia. And she conveyed to her that we had a bunch of ideas about life, and we were looking at how we could solidify these ideas to obtain those three pillars that I just mentioned. And so she invited us to her office. I'll never forget that day. You know, a lowly resident going to the assistant commissioner of the District of Columbia's office. And she was such a philosophical genius that, you know, she just picked our brains and asked us what did we want to do, where did we want to go. And then she shared her aspirations with us. Dr. Beverly Coleman Miller, and she was a public health specialist. So basically, she said, look, here's something that I want you to do. I want you to write a concept paper explaining to me your aspirations and your goals and what you want to do in life and how you want to do it. And so we did that. We had never written a concept paper.
So how'd you guys figure it out?
Well, she guided us, and that's a good question because we didn't know squat about how to do it, but she guided us. You know, obviously, we went to the library and did some reading to see, but she guided us. So we had multiple sessions with her in which we went over this, and she would interrogate us. You know, well, why do you think this way? Well, I want to, you know, let's take it this way and the other. And so we really looked at a lot of these things, and I'll never forget wondering, you know, just why, how was that going to benefit us in life, other than helping us to look introspectively and know where we wanted to go and where we wanted to be. Well, after that, she said, look, there's some opportunities coming up that may involve access to care for the underserved, people that need help. And you guys ought to look at and maybe trying to write a proposal to try to, you know, look at these types of things. And so that's what we did. And we basically set a proposal to the Department of Health for people who were under substance abuse recovery and providing medical care for those individuals. Because a lot of times we think that substance abuse should only be treated without recognizing that the other physical parts of their health need to be addressed as well. So that's basically, we formed a little company and put in a proposal, and we got the award.
Yeah, it's really amazing. You started a company, and so what was that process like? How did you guys even know what you were doing?
Yeah, good question. Well, actually, one of my partner's husband was a lawyer. My wife was a CPA. So we got information from them and reached out and did research on all of these, utilizing these resources, and decided that, hey, it's in our interest to go ahead and try to pursue this. And that was part of what we wanted to do all along in life. And so this fit into our whole aspirational goals.
But you guys were also residents.
True.
So how did you find the time to pull that off?
Well, one of the reasons why I went into emergency medicine was because I recognized that most emergency physicians work 36 hours a week. And so, like at Howard, we work 2 days on, 2 off, 3 days on, 3 off. So you had days off where you could, you know, work at other places. And we encouraged moonlighting because it helped your growth and diversity of knowledge. And so we knew that between the three of us and other people that we could bring on board in our specialty, that we would have it covered. And so that's just what we did on our days off. You could work. Quite often we met at night and after work. It was long hours, 10, 11 o'clock at night, you know, after work and planning and working out the situation. But those hours that we put in were helpful.
Can you explain a little bit more about what the company did, what its objectives were, and then how you guys met those objectives?
Well, basically, we had tailored ourselves to that specific work at that time. But our goal was to really start an emergency medicine group and to go out and to obtain contracts with different emergency departments. Did we continue on that way? No. At some point in time, we kind of parted ways and did other things. But that was our goal, and that's how we started looking at doing things in the entrepreneurial field.
Eventually, you stayed in D.C., and you became chief and director of emergency medical services in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Was that ever in your plan?
No. I can definitely say I never thought I would get the opportunity to do that. It was something that totally blew me away.
So how did you come across the opportunity?
When I left residency, I worked at one of the most prestigious groups in emergency medicine in the D.C. area, and that was Capital Emergency Associates. You know, I just didn't have a sense of fulfillment there. I worked at Holy Cross Hospital, which is one of the nicest suburban hospitals, and it was a great place to work, but I really didn't feel as though I was doing my mission in life. And my dad, he was always a great counselor, And I'll never forget, we prayed over the phone about it because Howard was asking me to come back to be a professor there. And all of a sudden, the phone rings again. And I pick up the phone, and it was the chairman of emergency medicine at Howard. And he said, "Dr. Moore, we really need you here at Howard." I said, "Sir, you've got it."
Wow.
And I mean, it couldn't have been a more implicit sign to me. And so that inspired me. When I went to Howard, I told him, "Look, my interest is emergency medical services, and I would like to be a liaison between our emergency department and emergency medical services. And I would like to help and influence them, help train them, help facilitate communications, you know, and I'll do that voluntarily." You know, I knew I wasn't going to get paid extra for that, but I loved, you know, back to my EMS and paramedic aspiration days, I loved dealing with EMS. So he asked me to go to these meetings, citywide meetings for EMS. Wow, those were really cool because I got to rub shoulders with the fire chief and with the head of medical control. And a lot was going on negatively with EMS at the time. And so, I mean, there was always cameras out there. It was a lot of high drama involved in these meetings. So I dedicated myself to improving EMS the best that I could. So I got involved in training. So we helped to train paramedics. I got our residents to help assist residents from George Washington University to help train DC Fire and EMS paramedics. So I was very much involved in the culture then. I was on the paramedic review board, which licensed paramedics. I had huge EMS days at Howard for our paramedics. So I got noticed, not that I was trying to, but I just loved it.
Right.
And it was fun. And one day I had gotten my board certification and I went to my chairman and I said, "Yeah, am I going to get my raise? Because you promised me a raise if I got my board certification." And she said, "No, I didn't promise you that." And I remember just walking out of the office dejected. And I walked into my little office and in walked two high-ranking paramedics from EMS. And they said, "Dr. Moore, we may be changing medical directors, and we are very interested in you becoming medical director of EMS for Washington, D.C. And I mean, I couldn't believe it.
Did your chairman know that this was going to happen?
No.
No?
I didn't. And I was like, this was another divine intervention.
Oh, wow.
And I said, "Well, yeah, I'd be interested in it." And so I interviewed with the mayor and things just happened. And
do you believe in the idea that you could create your own luck?
By placing yourself in the right atmospheres or environments, utilizing the talents that you have, you can create opportunities that will further your career and your goals and interests. And let's see if something happens. But I'm not one to just push it and force things. You know, if it's not going to happen, I'm fine. If it is, I'm fine with that.
So, but a lot of times people will graduate from medical school, go to residency, and they've already achieved a lot at that point.
Mm-hmm.
What made you feel like I still want to do more?
I think having an impact on populations more so than individuals. In the emergency department, I can save one or two lives, but working with EMS, I can develop policies that can help hundreds of people.
So after you did your time as the director of EMS at DC,
mm-hmm.
you returned to Nashville. among other things, you were a director of emergency medical services at Nashville General Hospital, which is a major safety net hospital in Nashville. And you're also director of bioterrorism for the State Health Department.
Mm-hmm.
You've held all these leadership positions over your career. What is your philosophy on leadership?
My philosophy on leadership is to be innovative, to be performance-driven, to create a culture of growth within your organization, a culture of opportunity, a culture of ideas. And if a leader can motivate his team and under these cultural circumstances, you can have an organization that is efficient and effective and flexible to meet today's challenges.
And your latest project is the creation of an urgent care clinic called Moore Life Urgent Care. How long ago did you start it?
Looking at urgent cares, one of the things that I also realized while I was in residency is I had to moonlight. And I moonlighted at urgent cares when I was in D.C. And one of the things that I noticed is that, wow, 60% of the people that are in our ER are the same people at urgent cares. And I could provide the same care much more efficiently and effectively in a retail, urgent care retail setting than I could in a bulky bureaucratic emergency department that has high cost and slower times. So I've always said that I wanted to embark on that, and the opportunity came up that allowed me to pursue that dream while working in the emergency department. And I'll truly say that that has been an awesome experience.
And then at what point did you start making the moves for this project?
Okay, for this particular project, I didn't get the opportunity until about 3 years ago.
How did you think, okay, this is in my mind, and then where did you start? Because you had no formal business training.
Correct.
Everything is on the fly.
Correct.
While you're still having this full career, you're also learning how to run and manage and do everything with the business.
Yeah.
Especially one that's as regulated as healthcare.
Definitely.
So 3 years ago, you have this idea, and what were your steps? Like, how did you start making your way through?
Good question. Well, the couple of things that I thought about, number one was location. Number two was the body of knowledge surrounding establishing an urgent care. Well, first of all, I knew that with you always work in a field that you've worked in. And so I had 30 years of experience in emergency medicine. So I knew the health delivery part of it. But what the business part was what I needed to orientate myself to. And so every good businessman does his due diligence, his or her due diligence. And basically, you know, just Google is awesome. I Googled, you know, how do you learn how to run an urgent care? And up came the Urgent Care Centers of America. And they had conferences. And then they had two-day seminars on how to open up urgent care. And I was like, whoa. And actually, that occurred 5 years ago.
Okay.
And so I said, bam, that's what I need to do. I attended the urgent care conference, and I did it. Actually, I think it took 2 years. I went to two conferences, and I just basically, you know, absorbed all the information that they were giving. More importantly, it's not enough just to sit in class and listen to the classes, but network with the individuals who have the same aspirations as you do. And I found out in the classes that a lot of them were non-medical people. There were a lot of insurance types, business MBA types, all kinds of people that knew that the success of urgent cares was out there and that it was a successful entrepreneurial endeavor to engage in.
Did that bother you that there weren't as many physicians in the room?
No, it inspired me.
Why?
Because it let me know that these business people knew that it was a successful entrepreneurial endeavor and that they would not be doing it if they hadn't done their research as well.
Doesn't it not bother you that you could have non-medical people run medical businesses, even though they don't necessarily know how to deliver care?
No, it doesn't bother me because I see that every day. Hospital administrators are usually not physicians.
But should physicians have those roles?
Do I think that business people go into medicine without any advice from a healthcare practitioner? I know better than that. They wouldn't. And most all of them that you talk to, definitely they will have a medical director or they have a medical advisor. So medicine is always involved in it, but who is leading out in it? And I feel like it should be us, healthcare providers. And I think that we should learn more of the business end and bring that and join that with our medical knowledge and utilize that as a platform to provide top-level care.
And so after you went to these two conferences and you kind of started doing your networking, do you have any advice on how to be an effective networker?
Yeah. Well, definitely when you go to these conferences, you talk to individuals who are sharing the same goals and aspirations. It was actually interesting. When I went to one of those courses, one of my fellow residents was there from emergency medicine at Howard. And this was, some 30 years after residency?
Wow.
And we had a meeting of the minds that this is almost the natural progression of what one does in their emergency medicine careers is, okay, you work in the ERs for 30 years or so, then let's take it to the next level. And how can I establish something that has bricks and mortar to your names? Because the field of emergency medicine is changing. And most of us work with groups that can either you have a contract one day and you may not have a contract the other day. And what do you have to show for it if your company's contract goes away? Those types of thoughts were going on in my mind and his mind as well. And we said more and more emergency physicians. And sure enough, in my career, a lot of my colleagues were starting urgent cares, but not totally abandoning emergency medicine because we always love it, but adding another component, another facet to our career goals and aspirations.
Do you think we're are coming to a saturation point for urgent cares?
No.
Mm-mm. They're still very necessary?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And one of the other things that I utilized in my due diligence was I can't emphasize how important it is to go to conferences and network with people that have same ideas, to talk to vendors who have offered the services that will get you to where you need. I was able to link up with consultants that had built up urgent cares, and they agreed to be, for a service fee, to be my consultant as I went on this journey to establishing urgent care. So not only did I have this didactic knowledge from a conference, I had a partner, a consultant, who was with me every step of the way, who had established not only one or two urgent cares, but 30 urgent cares. And so not only did they have that, but they also had an electronic medical record system that they had developed that was the best EMR in the urgent care world. And so partnering with these individuals who are just actually my best partners in life. We're just the best buddies. They provide my billing and coding and all those kinds of things. So I didn't have to focus a lot on those aspects, and I could more or less focus on building my particular business.
Once you started, you know, making your contacts, having this consultant, at what point did you finally start finding an actual building and then outfitting the building so that it could provide care?
That's a good question. I was actually thinking about that. Again, you know, I think divine intervention in my life has been the story of my life. I happened to visit one of my buddies was working with a doc and had a business in Gallatin, Tennessee. And basically, I went there and visited, and I just thought, number one, the building was so nice. And it was on a main street, main drag, and the building had a neurologist had it, and he really outfitted it to be feasible for a clinic. And so I noticed it. Next thing I know, they shut down, and the building just, you know, sat there for 5-6 years.
Whoa.
It foreclosed. And, you know, by the time I had done my due diligence and all of that, and I said, I'm going to see if that building's still there. And I doubt it. It's a beautiful, you know, little building. And I said, I know it's sold. It's right on the busiest street in Gallatin. And that business, that building happened to be here, and basically checked, and it was still foreclosed for 5 or 6 years. So basically, just went to the bank and said, I know I'm not, you know, a hugely independently wealthy person, but will you have faith and trust in me, knowing the credentials that I've had in life and the wisdom that I've had in life? Will you help me to finance this operation? And so they evaluated my thought processes and evaluate. They knew the building. It's a small town. It was a bank in that town. It was a small bank. And so they said, you know, that's a good idea. And you're making a sound proposal. You've got a great performer, which my consultant helped me to put together. And the consultant had all sorts of things to help me to look good as far as to the bank. So that's how we picked it. And a lot of people ask, why did you go to Gallatin? I wasn't looking so much for location as I was for an opportunity that it would allow me to be in control of my destiny, more so than just going in a storefront that be leasing from somebody and would be under their control. I wanted to control my destiny. And I also felt that urgent care should be balanced with wellness as well. I'm a believer. Back from my days at Riverside Hospital, they emphasize wellness, total body. And I wanted to use that to impact in lives, knowing that obesity was a huge issue with healthcare. I wanted to address medical weight loss. I wanted to address other issues that individuals have with healthcare. I wanted to address occupational health and wellness. And so I wanted a facility that I could house all those entities with and address all those different areas of life.
And you mentioned before that you think physicians should build that business knowledge.
Absolutely.
How do you think they can go about that?
Well,
without getting an MBA, or do you think an MBA is the path these days?
No, I think it MBA definitely helps, and I would agree that if you can get an MBA, and I have definitely thought about that myself. But if you can learn things along the way and have individuals that can assist you and it buys you. I have a cousin that is a Meharry alum that is a dermatologist. He started a dermatology skincare line that is now has his skincare line sold in the Walgreens stores. They are sold in Walmarts all over wow. Texas. And so, you know, he had an influence on my life. So all of this entrepreneurship doesn't operate in a vacuum. You know, you lean on your community. You lean on your family. You lean on other individuals and your educational stair steps to help you achieve that. I wanted to emphasize one other thing. I felt that my urgent care would also be a place that I could help to train students from Meharry as well. And I also felt that that would be a platform to orientate people or students like yourself in emergency medicine to see what your options are in emergency medicine. So that was another reason having that opportunity to be able to let that happen. And we have had students and former students work there, and hopefully, you know, we'll have our students from the physician assistant program and other types of areas within Meharry get involved in education and training.
When you first started your business, mm-hmm. what do you wish you would have known? You know, would you have done anything differently?
It's hard to say. You know, business is a little bit of trial and error, educated trial and error. So, and again, things have always moved in the right direction for us that I just can't say that should I have changed something differently. Positive things have really happened. Like, and I'll just give you a case in point. When I went into Gallatin, there was only one other urgent care there. It's called Gallatin Urgent Care. Within 6 months of me opening up my clinic, I received a call from the owner of Gallatin Urgent Care. And he said, Dr. Moore, you know, we've been watching what you're doing and you're doing a great job. I'm thinking about retiring. How would you like to take over, you know, my business and open your doors to my patients? And again, another divine inspiration.
Yeah, and that was really
or
nice
intervention.
Of them.
And that happened with no cost. And it's just things like that that have said, okay, there, you know, there are negative things that occur with all businesses, but there are also very positive things. And you can't say, oh, shoulda, coulda, you know, woulda, you know, in all situations. You just have to keep plowing on. And throughout your adversity, you know, you look at challenges or opportunities in disguise. And I have always felt that way. And we have always turned those challenges into opportunities.
And what advice would you have for anyone wanting to start their own practice, whether it's a clinic or it's an urgent care?
The biggest problem, there's two huge problems with starting businesses. People that don't have a clue or experience in whatever field they're opening up a business. I've had friends of mine who, you know, were physicians, and they'll buy up restaurants and not really have a clue about, you know, how to or experience in running restaurants. Just an opportunity came up and they jumped in it. I don't think you should conduct yourself in that manner. So you have to have some expertise in that field or a knowledge base or some intuition into that field. The other thing is capital. You have to have sufficient capital in order to run a business successfully. the biggest, most businesses fail because of undercapitalization.
How much capital should you have for a possible, like if I'm about to buy a building that I want to start a business in, or even starting the business in that building, like what percentage should I have already before I even go to the bank for help?
Okay. So, you know, it varies. It varies about what location you're in. You know, like I said, most urgent cares are in shopping center storefronts. And so the amount of capital that you need for that is not that much. But obviously to secure a building and to, you know, have a big operation, it's going to be bigger. So your consultant will be able to help you in those endeavor, you know, in that process. And your banker, obviously, will help you in that process. I think it's always good to go in, you know, with your banker. And your bankers know, they have an idea of what it takes to run a business. And also, important thing for us is they help to provide lines of credit by which you should have in case, you know, your down periods, when business goes down, and you have to have expectations that there are going to be peaks and troughs in your business. And your job is to, how can I make this trend go up and be level and minimize the fluctuations? Having, you know, lines of credit that you can draw down on when there are negative periods is important. But my philosophy is to not use those lines of credit and just have them as insurance in the event that you need them. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we've been very fortunate not to, you know, utilize that. Getting good deals, getting medical equipment, used medical equipment that was barely used, getting used supplies that was in tip-top condition. All those kinds of thought processes came to my mind that helped to ensure that this enterprise could successfully stand on its 2 feet.
And what's your favorite thing about being an urgent care owner? Like, what's your favorite thing about your business?
You know, I'm glad you asked that. I happen to staff my urgent care mainly with mid-level providers, PAs and nurse practitioners, because when you think about it, in the emergency departments, and I was the first to bring mid-levels in to the emergency department at Nashville General, and I got a chance to see how they worked in our urgent care in General Hospital. And see that, boy, they could really manage most urgent care situations very effectively under my supervision. The ability to have them conduct that while you're doing other things, that and that frees you up to do other things that you need to do to make everything happen, was a joy to work with a team and to customize that team to be able to deliver the highest level of care possible. You know, we study our Google stars, we study our Facebook stars and feedback from our care, and we're 5-star in it or 4.5-star in it.
That's awesome.
And so we love that. But my biggest joy is when I get to work there and talking to the patients are so interesting, and we share stories. And I love that experience because I'm not working under the gun like I would in the emergency department. Right. So my face-to-face time is a lot more, is increased in my urgent care setting.
So the question I have is, you have all these projects going on. How do you, one, keep yourself motivated? And two, how do you keep yourself organized?
Well, I guess one may say I'm probably disorganized.
Oh, no. But somehow it's working.
there was a couple of good books in my life that kind of influenced me. One was the Keeping Your Eyes on the Eyes on the Prize, written by Juan Williams, and basically the focus of that was the civil rights movement, and Juan demonstrated that despite all the winds of life and the strifes and all the interruptions, keeping your eyes on the prize helps one to achieve those goals and aspirations. Secondly, it was The Effective Executive. I just got that off my dad's shelf. I had a couple of days when I was just looking back at my activities in school and said, hey, I am not effectively doing what I need to do. And this was in college. And I said, I'm going to look at some of these self-help books my dad had. And The Effective Executive was there. And man, that book, it not only taught you how to be effective executive, but it taught you how to be effective student. It taught you how to be effective at life, how to conduct meetings, how to establish goals and objectives in life. And that influenced me from an early time in the 70s in my life. And so I think those two tenets helped to kind of somewhat organize me. But I just found that things just fall into place if you need them. Now, let me just say this. One thing is you also have to learn to delegate. You cannot be in the mix and doing everything. An effective executive has to learn how to delegate responsibilities and lift themselves above and have a 30,000 foot overview of what you're doing. And so that is the way that you can choreograph a success in your life.
And somewhat related to that, you also have to build a good team.
Absolutely.
So what advice do you have for anyone trying to build a team?
The advice that I have for someone to build a good team is, number one, you're always going to make mistakes. There are always going to be people that you think are going to work out, and they don't work out. Assess that situation as quickly as possible and make changes when necessary. Also, observe people's hearts as best as you can and assess if their heart is in the right place. There are ways that one can do this, and it can't be done in a snapshot. That's something that you learn over time. Some of the other things that helped me to learn or assess this is people that volunteer for things, people that want to help, that have altruistic goals in life. Those are people that I generally pick for my teams. Obviously, you want intelligent people. You want people that are conversant. You want people that have new ideas about life and new approaches to life. All those things. And you want to create an atmosphere that will facilitate their ideas and their growth and facilitate them being leaders. And if you can facilitate that, the other members of the team look at that and they grow, they feed on each other. And that's the way to me to grow a strong team. Also, just showing your empathy and your interest in their lives, being involved in your team's lives is so important, and being empathetic when they go through things. That's important, because if they know that you're with them through thick and thin, they'll be with you through thick and thin.
I could listen to you like all day talking about these things, but I really want to thank you for joining us today. This is all really good advice. Where can people find you?
Yes, my website is morelifeurgentcare.com. And so they can always communicate.
There's a contact. Me.
Exactly. There's a contact. And I work, at the physician assistant program at Meharry.
And so it's More Life, MORE,
LIFE, urgentcare.com. And check out our website. It's an excellent, well put together. And marketing is also very important.
One last piece of advice. So thank you very much, Dr. Moore.
Yes. Thank you, Bassam. And I'm also very proud of your choice of career and your success.
Steve Case, the founder of AOL, once said, "You shouldn't focus on why you can't do something, which is what most people do. You should focus on why perhaps you can, and be one of the exceptions." So go ahead, listeners, be that exception. How to launch your business, your practice, or your next great idea is only a Google search away. So what are you waiting for?
For more information about Dr. Hustle, to view today's show notes, or to contact Bassam, visit drhustle.com. If you want others to know about this podcast, please write a review at the podcast store, and please link to us on social media at Dr_Hustle on Twitter and at Dr.Hustle on Instagram. This podcast is produced by Bassam Zahid, whose other work can be found at bassamzahid.com. Thanks for listening.